Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today is someone that I, I wish there were a positive word for envy, because he's somebody that I kind of envy, because I always wanted to be a pilot. In fact, when I was really young, what I really wanted to be was a World War II pilot, but it was over. I just love planes. I love flight. And this guy actually did something about it. So with me today is Corey Combs, who builds electric aircraft and is a thought leader on the electrification of aircraft. We're going to talk about that. It's very exciting. He's the founder of a company called Ampere, which is AmpAire.com. And, you know, if you just go check out the website just to see the cool little, repeating video there, it's totally worth it. These things are just gorgeous. I want one. I need to get a pilot's license. It's very cool. Ampere, AmpAire.com. And he is also a TED Fellow, because he's a thought leader in this whole realm of hybrid aircraft and electric aircraft, which, 5 minutes ago seemed totally ludicrous and impossible, and now it's actually happening. And I think all of our brains need to catch up. So you can find Corey on LinkedIn at /in/Corey-Combs-2b08 868. I won't bother saying that again. If you do a search at LinkedIn for Corey Combs Ampere, or you look in the show notes, you can find him. And Corey, thank you for taking the time to join me today on speaklikealeader.show.
Well, thanks, John. And I think right back at you, something that I've really whatever the good word is for envied is someone has a platform and that they really can enable him to get involved with people doing really exciting things across multiple industries and in technology, and help really get the word out and help them be more effective. So just super, super impressed with what you're doing, and really great to be on this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm really happy to have you here, because yes, I do think that what you're doing is maybe in the TED parlance, an idea worth spreading. So, before we jump into a little bit more about electric aircraft and where what's possible and what's coming and all that, I think you've got a pretty interesting story and background. In some ways, it makes it seem like it was meant to be that you would be doing this. Do you mind sharing a little bit of that, this idea came from and your background and stuff?
Well, I think you could say it started with my grandfather, who actually I fulfilled your dream of being a World War II pilot.
Yes, he did.
The person who exposed me to aviation earliest was my grandfather, and he was a P-38 pilot, but he actually started working with Jack Northrop of Northrop, which the company that now became Northrop Grumman, which I later was my first job in aviation in 1940. He worked there for about a year before Pearl Harbor happened. Then he volunteered to become a fighter pilot, and then he flew in across the Pacific, but flew in New Guinea, including Charles Lindbergh, actually the kind of group he famously came to and taught them how to fly the aircraft better and to achieve longer ranges. He was in that fighter group.
Wow.
75th. So it's just really storied history. And then he came back from the war, and then of course, like many pilots that flew fast planes, he found what's the fastest plane he could get. And then he ended up getting a Mooney M20, and which was kind of really the ex-fighter pilot plane at the time. And yeah, when I was a kid, he would fly it and come visit us. That really was the first time I really got exposed to planes. And so at a very young age, I was like 4 or 5, I just asked my parents, like, who builds planes? Ask my relatives. Who builds planes? I didn't ask about who flies them for some reason. I really wanted to.
That's cool.
Because I was into Legos and things. And they said, oh, engineers. I want to be an engineer. And so after all these years, I ended up becoming one and even working in the same company that my grandfather briefly worked in before becoming a fighter pilot. So it's just kind of a really interesting backstory there. But how I actually got into electric aircraft is even more
Story. Yeah, that's another really exciting story. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I was always into planes. I, from a young age, wanted to become an engineer to build planes. And most interested in just the smaller aircraft, like the ones that he'd flown. And I ended up, my family spent a lot of time doing medical work in Haiti. And I went on a few trips with them to Haiti to help them out just as an assistant. Never really got into the medical side myself out of the trip. What I got out of the trip is just how important small aircraft were in places like Haiti. So just seeing how we flew from the capital, Port-au-Prince, to a small city in the Central Plateau region called Hinche. And flew out there in a small six-seater plane, about the same size as the plane that we've been flying right now with Ampere. And went there, buzzed a grass field, scaring the goats away. And a guy on a bicycle had a little bell on his bike and scared the rest of the goats away, and went and landed with the medicine and the medical personnel. And just how important that really is. And now there's just been another earthquake there. Just how important small aircraft in particular and aviation in general is for kind of humanitarian endeavors. So I was really interested in kind of the engineering side, the humanitarian side. And then I got kind of obsessed with electric vehicles. And kind of in college, I like to say it happened when I almost got run over by a Tesla Roadster. Professors had one of the earliest Tesla Roadsters back when I was at Stanford, and I didn't hear it coming. It stopped when I was in the crosswalk, and it was low speed, but I was just amazed that I couldn't hear anything at all. Wondered what that was, and just kind of got exposed to some of the early work in electric and autonomous cars. Got to ride in one of the first autonomous cars when I was at Stanford, just for a class I did on autonomy, which was amazing to have no one in the driver's seat and someone with a kill switch, but it was driving itself. And just kind of seeing the convergence of where autonomy was going, where electrification was going, and just aviation, my interest in that. Really wanted to make all those things mesh, and then got really interested in aviation startups. Some of my friends went to SpaceX, considered going there, but just not so into rockets, really into planes.
Yeah.
There just wasn't any way to bring all those things together. So I ended up working at Northrop, spending some time learning about aviation. Worked on kind of advanced X-plane projects, really interesting stuff. But around 2010 is when the movie Iron Man 2 came out. And in that movie, there was a brief cameo of Elon Musk where he told Tony Stark, I've been working on this electric jet idea. Really, I'd like to talk to you about that. And just a brief cameo. And then afterwards, he posted that he's interested in building an electric supersonic jet someday. And I came back and said, that's impossible. That's crazy. And so I sat down kind of back to the napkin to try to run some numbers saying, just how impossible is this? He's crazy. Right. And I started realizing from trying to disprove the idea, wait a second. Actually, no, this is on the cusp of viability. Look at how batteries are improving each year. Then in a few years, and this was 2010 when electric cars were barely starting on the scene.
Yeah.
This is getting close to becoming possible. And so I decided, I'm going to kind of on the side work on some ideas for that. And so kind of started while I was still just working in the conventional aircraft and ended up going into a clean tech startup, kind of working on the ideas that became Ampere. And so that was a very long monologue, but super, super coincidental convergence of all of these different technology areas I was interested in to become feasible at about the same time.
So it's pretty cool, because one of the things I notice in that is that you've been, you know, triangulating on this and the coming moment for 10 years now, 11 years now, right? Like this, you sat down to disprove this, actually made yourself realize it was doable, and you've been angling towards it since then on some level. And then the other thing that I remember from our conversations is that big realization that you had about just how these aircraft, electrified aircraft, whether it's hybrid or battery or whatever, the way that they could have an impact on that humanitarian aspect of things that you were involved in with your family, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just when you look at kind of remote areas around the world, and it's just so hard to operate a lot of conventional aircraft, because most small aircraft, most people don't know this, are fueled with leaded fuel.
I didn't know that till like 6 months ago or 4 months ago or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it hasn't been used in cars for a long time now. But in planes, it's still the standard, and it's really hard to come by and very expensive in a lot of areas of the world. So right. You're either stuck with leaded fuel or kind of it's kind of like a jet engine core turboprop, which uses right. jet fuel. To run, you either basically have a small piston powered plane, which is easy to maintain, but the fuel yep. is super expensive and hard to come by, or right. you have to upgrade to a turboprop. Very expensive, burns tons of fuel, just really, really expensive for these kind of remote areas. And there just isn't right. a choice in between. So with kind of this hybrid aircraft and electrification, it kind of gives an option that actually works really well for some of these remote areas.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, and what I like about that is that it's such a specific need, and it's such a real need, and it's driving the costs of this down. And then people realize it's possible. And then that just has a rolling impact, in my opinion, around the rest of the world. You know, that's what mm-hmm. I'm kind of envisioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now are your, because I think one of the things that I don't know enough about your actual Ampere craft. Are they purely battery powered? Are they hybrid? You could use unleaded gas, I imagine, for that hybrid engine. How does Ampere do it? And what are some of the other things that you see going, coming down the road?
Yeah. So right now we're hybrid. And the reason we're hybrid is just because of the battery weight right now that we're looking at trying to, if you want to carry a significant amount of passengers or cargo, any significant distance right now, you could do it with a very small aircraft that's battery electric. So like some little training aircraft have been done pure electric, but for actual like commercial routes right now, you got to keep that battery size small enough that you're light enough to carry enough cargo. So right now we really think hybrid is the solution, but as batteries get lighter and lighter, you're going to get more and more electric over time. And eventually pure electric small aircraft are going to be possible. I mean, people have flown them, but they just can't carry anything besides the pilot right now.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of focused on this practical kind of near-term step. And that's enabled us to really get planes in the air right now. So they're not just on paper. We are not waiting for some miracle future batteries. We already have two flight aircraft projects we've done in California, one plane, and which is still there. And then we have a second plane, which flew in Hawaii. And now, as of a week ago, has been flying in Scotland, in the Orkney Islands. And it's going to be heading down to the southwest of the UK. So pretty exciting stuff.
Well, I just came back from a river rafting trip, and I had the opportunity to fly in a Kodiak, which you know all about. We were talking before, and that was a fabulous experience. We got to fly in and land on top of a mesa on this super bumpy, rocky Jeep road. And the thing was just such a champ, and it was such a gorgeous thing to be looking out of those windows, and just seeing all that amazing desert below us, and then have that thing land and bump along. I was just like, wow, this is an amazing aircraft. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thing that you're targeting, right? I mean, you're looking at.
That's exactly the size of aircraft, the next size of aircraft we're working on, that 9-passenger size. So we're doing a very similar aircraft to the Quest Kodiak, which is the one you rode on. Actually met the designer, seen the factory up in Northern Idaho. It's a real cool plane. We're working on a similar plane called the Caravan. So it's also a 9-passenger plane and used often in these remote areas. So, but we're building a propulsion system that's scalable to multiple types of planes. So our kind of goal here is not just to make one really cool electric plane. but to electrify all of aviation. So we're starting with our 6-seater right now that we've modified, and then going into this 9-seater kind of size aircraft next. And then that propulsion system, you double it, it could go onto a 19-passenger aircraft. We've already been studying that. And so just really all these kind of smaller aircraft that we really want to electrify, and then pave the way to get to bigger planes. So some of your regional jets and regional turboprops that you fly on these short distance flights, by saving so much fuel, you're going to drive down that price enough that you're actually possibly going to be able to fly more times with a smaller plane to these smaller destinations that have so few flight options, but actually be cost competitive with bigger planes that before you want to do a business trip, it could take 3 days because there's only one flight a day, middle of the day, or one every other day. But if you can get these smaller planes operating more frequently with really low costs and low fuel burn, I think it's going to be a revolution in not just the efficiency of aviation. It's not just going to be, oh, we're making aviation greener, but you got to pay more and it's going to be more inconvenient. It's actually the opposite. It's going to totally make aviation more convenient and more kind of distributed to all these airports around the country.
You know, every once in a while, Corey, I'd love to know how you feel about this. Every once in a while, I just have this feeling that kind of tears me in half. Like, part of me is just so distraught at how we're treating the earth and what's going on and just how bad things are and how quickly they're getting worse. And then there's this other part of me when I talk to people like you and I think about that future, like if we can just keep it together for what seems like maybe another 5 minutes, there's this other side to the thing. You know, I always point out to people that if we had never discovered oil, all the whales would be dead because we would have hunted them all down and the trees would probably all be gone. And you know what I mean? Like, there was this huge advantage oil gave us. And now we just need to thank it and move on, you know, and find these other ways. And I think we can do it. I just get really torn between like, are we going to, or not, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you're addressing kind of a very big topic here, but it's just, we could try to stick with horses and try to live in the wilderness off the land, but when you really look at what technology is doing, if applied correctly, it's actually helping the environment. When you look at like urban areas, people clustering together, people living on kind of small farm plots, just scattered all over the environment, actually have a bigger impact on the environment than kind of something that involves technology. So it's not the technology is evil, it's how it's used and the way it's used, just like flying. People say, oh, flying, we should just use trains, use other solutions. Well, for a lot of solutions, trains work great if you're going between big cities, if it's a relatively moderate distance, but you're never going to be able to get between islands with a train. Yeah. And even the Orkney Islands in Scotland, it's very difficult even to get boats in the North Sea between islands. So
big day.
Even if we forget about all other applications of planes, we've got to solve the problem of planes. Because there just isn't a solution for much of the globe that besides aircraft for remote areas or low population density. I'd argue really for the vast majority of the U.S. by land area, there isn't a good rapid transportation solution besides planes. If it's not a plane, it's going to be a single occupant private car, which is definitely not a good thing either. No. So it's I think we've got to solve the problem, not just say, oh, wow, gosh, we shouldn't fly. Flying's so bad. I think there's a way to, it's not like there's a utopia that's going to come from technology, but it's not like the alternative is a utopia at all. Imagine what would have happened if we had the current population growth and we're using horses in cities. I mean, our rivers would be horribly polluted. Oh. We do amazing amounts of disease and solution. So it's, I think there's kind of a utopia on either side. Like, technology solves everything. It's great. Or, no technology, let's go back to the earth. And honestly, that's not always very environmentally friendly.
No, yeah. I mean, and I do sort of have this feeling that if we use technology well, and we use it in really constructive, thoughtful ways, we could get a lot of the best of both of those worlds, right? Because I don't want to go back to just pure hunter-gatherer with all the disease load and things that we would have. You know, that doesn't sound great. And I certainly don't want to get rid of all wild areas in service of like the great silicon like takeover. I feel like if we use it right, we can really create like this amazing, wonderful setting and situation for ourselves. We just have to be really thoughtful.
Yeah. Well, and I think when you look at wild areas in aviation, actually there's a way in which we're very compatible because there's 5,000 airports across the US that are publicly accessible. There's over 10,000 airstrips if you count private airstrips.
Yeah.
These are very small and most people don't even know they exist. They only know about the big airports. Why? Because they're about a mile or so or less of land in a small strip, and that's it. There's no road coming out from it. There's no, you don't, when you're flying in the air, if you can solve the emissions problem, roads and even rail are
really horrible.
The environmental impacts when you look at animal crossings and they split up habitats. So there's definitely a place for them. But I actually think when you look at remote areas that aren't urbanized, that if you can solve the emissions problem in aviation, it is the least environmentally unfriendly.
I totally agree.
You're hopping over all the just kind of that big long infrastructure and all the cables, all the yearly maintenance, all the asphalt that needs to be put down. It's honestly, I think solving aviation isn't just, we still want to keep flying. So as a luxury, let's keep doing it. I actually think it's going to have all sorts of benefits if we can electrify
aviation. It's a super, really important point that I had not thought of before, because the way that you destroy a big piece of wilderness is just drive a road through it, you know, these logging roads and things like that, just like it just destroys wilderness. So it's really, that's a great point.
Yeah. Not to mention the planes that are protecting the wilderness, whether it's firefighting or whether it's aerial survey. I mean, aviation is so critical to so many sectors of the economy. I mean, you just can't simply say don't fly. You've got to solve the flight emissions problem.
Yeah. Well, I worked with a very big company in aviation a few years ago. And, you know, one thing that is really clear is there's just something special about being able to fly. And, you know, all other things aside, it's just an incredibly inspiring thing to be able to do. And I do think that the vast majority of people that are involved in that industry are just incredibly passionate, and there's just nothing quite like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one thing too about aviation and electric aviation is it's just so inspiring.
Yeah.
That when you show people what we're doing and they experience it themselves, it's just, it's just really, really inspiring. So I think I actually have a lot of hope that aviation is going to go in a positive direction for the environment, because it's just something that people are passionate about, that they really, when they see what we're doing, when they actually experience it, it's just, wow, this is the future. I mean, I was flying in our plane in Camarillo, and just it's amazing even in the hybrid, just when you're in the electric mode taxiing or even in flight, just how much quieter, just what an experience it's like. And I've flown in an all-electric trainer in the Fresno area recently. Actually, speaking of fixed infrastructure, flew over some of the high-speed rail construction. It's just it's just amazing. It's like you're in a sailplane and you're really experiencing flight without all the noise and all these other things kind of involved.
Yeah, all the noise and vibration and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably feel the air currents more like you do in a glider and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a really cool experience.
Well, so, you know, I'm looking at your website, watching this plane, you know, this little looping thing is this N337EE, I think it is.
Yeah.
Is that, so tell me a little bit more about what it's like to fly in that thing.
Well, it's just really cool. I mean, the instant torque of the electric motor. The electric motor is when you're taxiing, because you taxi all electric on the taxiway. You have people staring at you. You're moving and you're props moving. Yeah. I don't hear any noise.
Yeah.
But this is just the start. I mean, it's a hybrid, so there is engine noise, but it's definitely reduced from the original plane. And we can go in periods of time, like we've even done low passes or short periods where we're flying all electric, where the engine's idling And so that's really cool. But the I think the most exciting thing isn't just the plane itself or that it's electric. It's just if you can reduce the cost of these planes, their operation, reduce the environmental impact, just what you can do with them, just being able to fly like to the California Channel Islands where we're flying and to fly to all these locations and be able to do that at a low cost and low impact is just really going to transform the way people get around. And I think that's the most exciting thing. You can't too many things where we're talking about going for something that's environmentally friendlier than current options. We're saying you got to sacrifice for this, sacrifice for that. And I understand what people are saying. I think they're often coming at it from a good heart, but I don't see any historical really information except for very isolated scenarios where you solve environmental problem by telling a group of people to try to go without or try to do this or do that. You solve the problem by paradigm shifts, by making something that's better than like let's say a Tesla. Yeah. Why did Teslas succeed for electric cars versus some earlier attempts? Because it wasn't just we're going to give you an electric car. It's going to you're going to sacrifice pretty much everything.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, it's going to look like a Yugo and it's not going to go very fast, but you'll feel really good about yourself.
Yeah, it can't go far. It doesn't everything it performs worse in every way than the previous option, but at least it's electric. I mean, we don't think that's really the option. We really want something that in almost every metric outperforms existing options and happens to be more environmentally friendly. So when you talk to people about why they're going to go electric in the future, it's not just going to be, oh, I want to fly in an electric jet because I want to do something good for the environment. That might be part of it for some people, but it's no, because I want to have a flight from the airport nearby to me that doesn't have to go through TSA because under 19 passenger flights don't have the same sort of security requirements where I can just walk straight on with my bag, flash my ID, walk straight into the plane from the gate. Heck, they might even have the little shuttle bus pull straight up to the plane. That's how some of these planes operate. And you just get straight on the plane 10 minutes before the flight. You show up, you're on, and you go, and you arrive right where you want it to arrive. And you have less community impact. It's quieter, and you're not flying to these huge hubs. You can leave those huge hubs for the big international flights, but you can fly from the airport. And that's where I think people realize it's great. It's helping the environment, but it's also the whole ecosystem just works better. And you've got multiple flights a day versus you drive 2 hours to some airport where there's only one flight a day to where you want to go. And there's a connection to different places. I mean, it's just that's how I think we're going to lead this transition is not by going to everyone and saying, don't fly. And if you do, feel really guilty about it and try to go to this other solution. I mean, we got to give people a better option.
Well, you know, another Tedster, Sam Harris, if you know Sam, has a podcast and he's been talking about this quite a bit. In his context for this is, you know, if we did so poorly with the pandemic, I don't know how we're going to do anything about global warming. And he's like, he's become really convinced. And I agree with what I think you're saying and he's saying, which is the way we're going to do this is by coming up with products that outperform and still accomplish the goal of reduced emissions and solving environmental problems and things. And, you know, heck, that's a great idea. Let's do that. You know, like, I mean, why not? What a great challenge to say, how can we not only do this, but do this so it's better than the alternative and everybody wants it anyway?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the clean technology industry, it has really, I think, stumbled on that over the last couple decades, is that they've gone from a model of let's make something that's uglier, works worse, and,
and that was the model for so long.
Buy it because of some sort of virtual signaling, and that just doesn't. I don't think it's only will work for a small segment of the population, which is not enough to change worldwide. No. Even if it works for certain kind of wealthy countries, if they all decide we're going to pay a little extra and accept some inconveniences to do X, Y, or Z, you've got the whole world out there, and look at like Southeast Asia. All these other places, you're not going to, in the thousands of islands in Indonesia with hundreds of millions of people, Yeah. You're not going to be getting high-speed rail. You're not going to be getting electric cars between those. It's just, you've got to solve the problem of aviation. Yeah. And people are only going to adopt it if it's cost competitive and it's better than in as many regards as possible, better than what's out there right now. And you're starting to see that with things like solar and storage, that people are adopting it now, not just because it's green, but because it just outperforms on cost and performance, like battery storage on the grid.
Yeah.
It can instantly react when there's problems. And so I think this is a segue even into aviation of, it's not just about the planes themselves, all these airports, all this infrastructure. What if these became renewable energy hubs? It's a bunch of land that can't be built on. Install solar, install storage. Yeah. And now these airports, they keep losing power. I mean, you keep hearing every week, it seems like, an airport that has a blackout, doesn't have power, all the flights are canceled. I mean, so it's not that, hey, let's do this to sacrifice and to have some sort of just to go green, but it's going to, the entire air transportation system can benefit from looking at electrifying, not just the planes themselves going electric.
Yeah, which is interesting. You know, I've got a lot of entrepreneurs and corporate leaders that listen to the show, and it does make me start to think, like, you know, how does this fit into your plan for the future? You know, whoever you are, how, you know, I think that's really interesting. I love the electric airports, and they never run out of power because they're now hubs for that. The other thing that I think is funny and interesting and maybe doesn't get enough thought on amongst the people that are the most interested in the green stuff is that California and Texas both have a lot of, they're putting in a lot of solar, you know, but in California, you can sell solar by saying go green.
Yeah.
If you say go green in Texas, you don't sell solar. What you say in Texas is be resilient, get off the grid, you know, don't be dependent on the grid and be self-reliant. Right.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's, you know, that is a big selling point. I've got solar on my house, and that was part of my thing. You know, I didn't just do it for that. I'm still waiting for the batteries to come down a little bit so I can actually close the loop and get be fully off the grid and have some backup power. But I think that's going to happen in the next little bit here.
Yeah. And for me too, I have solar and electric car, and it's not just because the environment, it just really is nice to have that system on there, not ever have to go to a gas station and the performance, it just performs better. And I mean, it's really that kind of thing is what we need in aviation too, because we can't go to most of these operators around the world operating in remote areas and tell them, do you know what? You need to buy our product because it's green, but it's more expensive. Yeah. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that. They're not like, a very small segment of the aviation world is going to buy our product if it was just selling it on
green. Yeah.
We sell it based on cost and performance. That's how, and that's how we're going to get this thing out there. And I think that's key for any kind of green technology, is that you've got to work to, as quickly as possible, get to that, I'd say, the Texas scenario of where it just snowballs. I mean, look at wind power. I mean, California have been investing in wind power for decades, have by far the most installed wind. Now Texas has many times as much wind as in California, and installed in a much shorter period of time. Why? Yeah. Because the cost tipping point hit.
Yeah.
And it just was installed like crazy. You're going to see the same thing in West Texas with all this kind of flat land, oil field land, where a former oil field, just all this land that's owned out there, it's going to be a boom in solar. So what we're trying to do is do a practical kind of iterative approach till you hit that snowball point in aviation. Yeah. And it's coming.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Hey, as I look at this plane, I notice that you've got a prop in front and a prop in the back. That's kind of cool. Tell me a little bit. Not that everybody that listens flies planes, but I got to imagine there'd be some analogies to driving a car. You did talk about the the torque that these things, the instant, you know, on, and what's it, what are some of the flight, you know, the flight characteristic differences, and what are some of the things that you can do with this that you couldn't necessarily do with a gas plane?
Well, one big one I think is pretty interesting, what we're doing with our plane in California now, while other ones flying in the UK, is we are upgrading it to be an in-flight electronics testbed for ARPA-E, which is a Department of Energy program. And we're going to be testing their power electronics in flight. So we have this tiny little aircraft where we can export more power than used to be able to be exported from a very big specialized test aircraft.
Right.
And it's just coming straight from our propulsion system. So we can test things that are in the hundreds of kilowatts of power in an aircraft that is much smaller than would output that amount of power. So you'd need a huge business jet or even like a 737 size plane with banks of specialized equipment costing tens of thousands of dollars a flight hour to test this hardware. Whereas we can stick it in our plane for a fraction of the cost and test these new technologies. So we're using this plane as kind of a test bed for all different new technologies. People have reached out to us about new propellers. They've reached out to us about new motors, new inverters. We're going to be testing a new inverter with this ARPA-E program. So I'd say one thing about this first step is it's not just about the plane itself and how it operates, but how can we even use our planes right now to help further the whole transition of electrification, doing something with the plane that you really couldn't do otherwise. I mean, no other plane this size can output that much power. So that's one thing. And that's there's all sorts of people that are interested in that.
That's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. And does it have a similar experience to, say, the Tesla when you stomp on the gas? Like,
it's pretty cool. I mean, you just push on the throttle for the electric motor and it goes.
It just goes boom.
When you look at, let's say, a traditional plane piston engine, it's incredible. It's not like driving a car. These are very old-fashioned beasts in most cases. I mean, you're still adjusting the fuel air ratio with this choke throttle as you go up in altitude.
Right.
You're adjusting the RPM. There's no real electronics for most of the engines flying out there right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just really old school. I mean, honestly, my grandfather's P-38 that he flew in World War II, the engines on that plane, the liquid cooled Allison V-12, they were more advanced, honestly, in a lot of ways than most of what's flying right now in our GA aircraft fleet.
Yeah.
And even compared to cars before Tesla came, like the chance for disruption of just push button and move throttle and it just goes and it sits there. You don't need to worry about the starting and warm up. You don't need to worry about shock cooling in a it just works, and it doesn't matter what speed it's running at. It always produces high power and torque across a wide speed range, unlike a front, which kind of gets complicated. So it's just incredible. I mean, just things like taking off the traditional engines, they have to go fuel rich. They burn a bunch more fuel when they go to max power. It's just all sorts of ways that these electric motors, and this is just the infancy of it, the really first attempt, already are just so much more convenient than the existing systems.
That's cool. And in these hybrid things, I'm assuming that you're using an engine that runs on unleaded. So that just already makes it, is that right?
Well, so right now we've taken the existing engines, removed one, and we're running with the other one. So we reduced the amount of leaded fuel burn tremendously. And our next step, is using an unleaded fuel, and actually the ability to run on biofuel. So biojet fuel or sustainable aviation fuel. So we haven't got there yet. We're reducing the amount of fuel use by significantly in our current aircraft.
And but still getting there,
moving to a completely renewable fuel source.
That's super cool. I mean, you know, every step is something, right? Like if you take out one engine and cut the fuel use in half, that's half the fuel that's not being used. And the next step is switching it over. That's really, really cool. And so I guess that means that you're renovating or whatever the word would be, these older planes. So you're actually just using the plane that's it. They don't have to get a whole new plane. They don't have to
Yeah. So that's a big deal in aviation because planes have a very long lifespan. So people don't replace their planes every 5 years like people do cars.
Yeah.
And so our design is working for both freshly built existing models of planes, but they can be freshly built. So we're working on that right now, or they could be the existing model that's already been built. We can convert it. So it's actually going to be both. Some of these planes are still in production that we're working on. So we'll take the fresh production planes and they'll have our system in it when they're sold to customers. And we'll also be able to take existing fleets, including some of the fleets that we're working with that already have these planes, and we'll convert them to be hybrid electric. So it's something that I think is really critical, that we can't just solve the problem of new planes being built. There's 200,000 existing kind of smaller prop planes in the US, and they're sticking around for decades. So we've got to solve that problem too. There isn't the capacity to replace them all with new planes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the coolest parts about this, right? Is we don't have to wait for all those old planes to wear out and get so old we can't use them anymore before we can make these changes and dramatically reduce their impact and their footprint and make them work better. And, you know, that's really, really, really cool. I'm just so stoked on what you're doing, and it's just so cool. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come share this with us and tell us about it. It's for me, it's a very bright spot, you know, out there in what can often, you know, on certain days, seem like a lot of dark stuff. You know, this is just so cool, and I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm glad that you're after it, and I'm glad you're getting recognized for it. And is there anything that someone listening to this could do to help the effort? Is there anything, you know, that you would ask of people?
Well, I'd say one thing is find out about the local airports in your community, and I think too often the only way that the airports are interacting with the community is a bunch of people getting angry at them for noise and wanting to close the airports down.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the airports were there first
and
the community were built up around it. But instead of just looking at these airports most people don't even know they're there. And but there's one within 15 minutes of the average American. There's an airport everywhere, just dotted over the entire map of the U.S. And so find out about the local airport. Try to look at how that airport could do things like use electric equipment, install solar, and to install electric ground equipment, install storage. Let them know that electric planes are coming.
Are coming,
Look at your local airline operators and let them know that you're interested in seeing their plans for going electric. And I think it's not really a problem so much right now of people are resisting it, or it's just they don't even know this
just
exists.
Don't know.
It's so new. And we are in the very early baby steps of the industry. Just like 10, 20 years ago, most people didn't even know what an electric car was.
Right.
And you had Tesla Roadster, little two-seat Roadsters out there, which are also a modification of an existing car. And just like we're starting with. We've still got a little ways to go to get to like the Tesla state of having a big semi truck and
big
planes and 5-6 different models. It's still in the future, but I think right now, if people start recognizing what's happening, I mean, that future is coming quick. We're just doing the baby steps, but in 5-10 years, it's going to be amazing to see what's out there. And the airports that are prepared for it, that have chargers that are looking at this future, I think are going to be the first ones to get this sort of service. So that would be one thing.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Go share this podcast with your local airport. I think that's a great idea. All right. Well, so Corey, anything that I didn't ask that I should have asked maybe, or anything else you'd just like to let people know?
Well, I mean, I think one big thing that people always ask is a lot of people listening to these sort of podcasts is not just how can I get involved, but how can I do something like this? So if you're interested specifically in Ampere, join us. We're hiring, and take a look at our website and careers page. But I would say just for everyone out there, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of throwing up their hands with, there's a wildfire near me, the environment.
Yeah.
But it's there. You can do things about it right now.
Yeah.
There's practical steps that you can take. I think people are waiting for kind of technology miracles or things to come. But yeah, the only way those things come is if you work on it. Like,
yeah,
you have a house, do run the numbers. Look at if solar panels make sense. Look at if an electric car makes sense for you.
Yeah.
But even more than that, if you have any interest in engineering or any, you don't have to be an engineer to be in a tech company. You could be in marketing. You could be in sales. You could any role that you can play. If you care about this electrifying aviation or any other industry like this, get involved. It's there's a huge number of jobs in STEM fields and all this stuff, and too few people to fill them. So yeah. I think it's really that would be the big key. Advocacy is great. Liking this, following it on the internet and looking at the news articles, we appreciate that. But what we appreciate even more is people doing their part, and especially young people listening to this that study engineering. But even if you don't study engineering, if you're studying almost any field, you can get into something working in electric vehicles or a clean grid or something in this field. It's just really, or even just education. Really, almost anything you're doing, you could get involved in this if you really care about kind of the environment and this problem.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's such a great, great note to end on. You know, like, I think there's a saying, you know, we're the ones that we've been waiting for, you know, so stop waiting, go do it. Whatever it is you do, just go do it. I love it. Corey, thanks very much for taking the time out to do this with me and to share all this with us. This is Corey Combs of Ampere, AMPAIRE.com. Go check it out. Just watch that looping video like I just did for the last, you know, 50 minutes. And I'm still not tired of it. It's so beautiful. And your batteries are super good looking too. Never said that to another guy before, but that was terrible. Anyway, thank you, Corey. And thanks for what you're doing. And, you know, thanks for being a focus for all this energy. Cause I know being a TED fellow has its upsides, and it also kind of has its downsides, like all the time you have to spend talking about it and being a spokesperson and all the attention that you get. And I think that you're doing that really graciously and really well. And I really wish you just massive, massive success in all of this. And, you know, I'm pulling for you, and thanks for doing it.
Well, thanks so much for those kind wishes, John. And I think that it's great to have this platform to help get the word out, and really excited to see what, not just this current generation of engineers and entrepreneurs will do, but the next generation. It's so much bigger than Ampere. And but if you want to join Ampere, do join. But I mean, they want you, this tech industry, they want you down in Austin, down in Brownsville. I mean, they're screaming for people. Just if you're interested in anything tech, just come down. There's jobs for you. So it's great to get the word out about that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Corey. And thank you for joining us today. Just as a quick aside, I get questions about this. If you are interested in honing your story and creating your TED-like talk and getting that really working for you in your leadership position, in sales, in marketing, in all the myriad places that really having that clearly articulated, well-told TED-like talk and all the things that come along with it would make a difference, go check out Ed for Education, ed.executivespeakingsuccess.com, and join me in the Speak Like a Leader experience. The next one's happening on September 9th, but if you're listening to this after that, there's going to be another one and another one. So come check it out. And as always, I really appreciate you joining us, and I really appreciate you listening. I was really happy that Corey said he would join us, because I think what he's doing is so exciting. I hope it has made your day to hear this the way it's made mine. And I'll see you on the next Speak Like a Leader show.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.